Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Why are Spanish people constantly amazed when it rains in Spain? It surely rains enough to put a roof over the stand if you charge a lot of money for people to watch football. It surely rains enough for a football manager to buy a coat instead of standing there like you're in the final scene of a 90s rom-com. Obviously, football managers worldwide have been banned from using umbrellas under the Steve McLaren Convention of 2007, but surely there's a nice coat in the club shop or a Rayo Vallecano too earthy to sully themselves with a shop. Rayo's fans are protesting at the prospect of a stadium move. Good for them, but put a roof over the one you've got. Girona, I know it doesn't rain much in the UAE, but it definitely does in Manchester, so maybe get a consignment of rain jackets as part of the Savio deal. And Betis, whose fans can't be bothered to watch European football, maybe should consider the possibility that it might rain in Seville occasionally. Anyway, having finally shaken off the stigma of playing some low-rent European competition, Betis beat Athletic Club to strengthen their hopes of qualifying for Europe next season. All makes perfect sense. Sarcastic applause. La Liga Weekly would like to apologise for anyone seriously affected by exaggerated clapping. It's the scourge of the modern world. Thank heaven Spanish referees are finally making a stand for the poor victims. All of this nonsense in the introduction is because the top three all won. Luka Modric, who at the age of 83 must surely own a sensible coat, showed that he's still rather good at football. Barca played well, finished their chances, didn't chuck any stupid goals in. What are we supposed to do with that? And Girona aren't frauds after all. Losing away in Bilbao and at the Bernabeu doesn't mean they're finished. They will have to be stripped of all of their players and ideally their coach next season. Almeria played well again. They're warming up nicely and are targeting a victory by 2026. And so the story of the weekend was, hold the front page, Cadiz scored not one, but count them, two goals. We still have a relegation battle, everybody. Terry Gibson is here. Terry, you watched it all. Obviously, we had nine games because of the tragedy in Valencia. That game was called off. So, you know, best wishes to everybody involved in that. It's an awful, awful situation. But so you sat and watched the rest of the Spanish football for the weekend, and you basically thought, you know what, it was reaffirming. You enjoyed a good weekend of La Liga.
Yeah, it was one of those weekends where I was able to pick and choose my games and flick between La Liga and Premier League stuff. And it gave me a little bit of time to, not working on the games, to just evaluate why I like it, why I watch it as we do. Yes, it's a living and I'm allegedly a Spanish football expert. So I have to watch the games. We don't do this podcast on the back of, oh yeah, I heard they won and heard they won. It's something I really enjoy. I'm lucky to be involved in it. And over the weekend, there was enough games there to think, do you know what? I can see the attraction. And I'm still as enthusiastic about watching La Liga as I've ever been. And there was a chance for me to make comparisons between the English game and the Spanish game because of the weekend. I was flicking between the two. And I literally prefer the La Liga. I don't know if it's the style of football. I think it's the competitive nature that we had this weekend where, apart from the Barcelona victory, the rest of the games were tight. They were, you know, in the balance. Maybe not always the right team won, not the right outcome in terms of who was controlling the game and stuff like that. But it was game after game after game. I'm sitting thinking, that was good. There was a comeback in that one. There was, you know, it's interesting in terms of the relegation battle. And it still referred to the point that when I look at the cost, the amount it costs to assemble some of these squads in Spain, the majority of them, to be honest, and I look at the cost of assembling a Premier League team, I'm still astonished. I look at the quality in the Premier League, the quality in La Liga. I know the Premier League is hyped up and people are talking about the best league in the world and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But actually, if you strip it down and look at the quality, you know, it's astonishing that, in my opinion, there aren't that many teams in the Premier League that are fantastic. You know, everyone's, you know, Manchester City are the best team in the Premier League. They have been. In my opinion, they win the Premier League again this season. And probably if they've got the motivation, we'll go very, very close to retaining the Champions League. I think Liverpool are a good team. I think Arsenal maybe. I'm not convinced. I look at the result against Porto midweek in the Champions League. Everyone was expecting them to roll Porto over, and I knew that wouldn't happen. Slightly surprised though, but it's not a massive surprise that Porto beat Arsenal. And beyond that, I'm looking at teams again, the same as last season, the same as the season before, teams that disappoint, that have cost hundreds of millions to assemble. And they're not particularly, they're not very good. And they're not certainly not as good as they should be for the amount of money that clubs have spent. And that includes Manchester United, includes Chelsea. I think Spurs, my team, are improving, but they've spent a lot of money and maybe aren't as perhaps good as we all think, and perhaps as Spurs fans, and as good as they should be. But it's a work in progress at Spurs. A new manager, new head of recruitment. The recent signings have been good and look promising, but they've still got work to do in terms of moving players out and bringing players in. I get that. But beyond that, there's I don't see too much in terms of quality that justifies the tag of the best league in the world, and that anyone can beat anyone in the Premier League.
What it shows, I think, is that if you just flood a load more money in, it doesn't magically produce better players. It just means that, for example, you get some guy signing from, I don't know, Spurs signed a player from Genoa, didn't they, for 20-odd million. No Spanish, if he'd gone to a Spanish club or another Italian, not one of the, you know, the mega clubs, it'd have gone for a lot less money. He's the same guy. It's just, you know, the extra money doesn't magically produce a load more extra players. I've been amused the last day, the Liverpool-Chelsea war on Twitter. People talking about Liverpool like they're some kind of socialist republic of, you know, like scrapped their way with no money to anything. Well, hang on, you're sitting in the stand, you've got like guys who play cost 70 million, and you know, and the guy who headed the goals cost 75 million. And so they put some kids on because they had to, because there was an injury crisis, a temporary injury crisis. And they're talking like their athletic club or something, like they're 11 Scousers out there all playing for Liverpool. And then when people, if you push back on that, people say, oh, well, compared to Chelsea. I think, well, yeah, compared to Chelsea. Yes. But not compared to everything else in football. In the whole world of football, Liverpool is like the most expensively assembled, well, one of the most expensively assembled teams.
And those young players that Liverpool played, some of them were bought for more expensive than some of the La Liga players that we're looking at.
Yeah, they're not through the academy like Bobby Clark. Signed at 16 from Newcastle, didn't they? So it's
decent money for millions of pounds. Some of them, in some cases, it's £1-2 million on a... Well, you know, you're looking at Cadiz haven't spent £2 million on a centre forward, let alone a 16-year-old. So that's the thing that's always struck me. My opinion on the Premier League and La Liga is I don't think there's been a great deal of difference over the years. There is in terms of hype. Suddenly, you know, if you have a two or three good games in the Premier League, you're world class. And people keep rattling that out time and time and time again. I think the Premier League has benefited from having the best managers around in the last decade because of the money that's involved in the Premier League. I think it looks great on television in the Premier League when every ground is sold out. And they're all good stadiums. It's a full house. The atmosphere is great.
The spectators are dry.
Pardon?
The spectators are dry.
But the infrastructure in Spain is improving in La Liga. I do see a number of stadiums now that have been refurbished, and it's going in the right direction. There are still some that look archaic, though. And although it brings a certain culture to the league, the basic requirements of keeping people dry, keeping people out of the sun.
Yeah,
you know, if you're down in the south of Spain and there's no shelter, I've been to games and it's uncomfortable. You're sitting there burning. They need to, one or two of the clubs need to update their stadiums. The money is there now because it's been given to them, and you have to use it on infrastructure, so training ground and stadium work and stuff like that. So there's no excuse. So, but I think there are elements of the Premier League which are top class. But I do look at it and think in my opinion, I still love watching Spanish football. The intrigue, I love the different cultures that we get in La Liga. I think that's one of the biggest attractions to me. You know, in one weekend, you can sit there, you can watch a game in the freezing cold, maybe Alaves, and then you suddenly go to Cadiz and it's bright and sunny, and you know, Betis this week, it was pouring down the rain, which was unusual. The stadium even looked different in the grey and the rain at Betis. It didn't look as colourful. It looked
empty because they all disappeared to the top of this the only bit of roof where you get some protection.
And anyway, I just
should we do the games?
I was enthusiastic about this weekend. There's no obvious reason why, other than an accumulation of games where I thought, I'm just looking, there was no nil-nils. So that's maybe one of the reasons. And there was interesting games, you know, teams scoring late, teams making comebacks, a surprise result on the Friday evening with Real Sociedad losing at home again. Almeria putting up a fight, and for the worst team in La Liga for some distance, they held against Atletico Madrid and looked pretty decent. Cadiz, as you said, scored a couple of goals. Celtic throwing away another league. There was loads of intrigue. Athletic Club will be disappointed with the outcome of their game. They'll be disappointed with Nico Williams and Chimi Ávila scoring a goal and being taken off because he was going to get sent off for acting. It was loads of... I really, really did enjoy watching this weekend.
Right, shall we start with Barcelona? So 4-0 against Getafe. In fact, Philip sent us a message, didn't he? Basically, they played really well and there was no real drama is the upshot of it, isn't it? Which is sort of what we've been driving towards, isn't it, with Barcelona. Only got to see half the match, he said, but I gather on Twitter, it was the sort of performance people expected as a reaction to Xavi's announcement. It was maybe what he was hoping. We're all speculating with that, aren't we? That it would galvanise them, that sort themselves out. It looked like a sorted out Barcelona.
Yes, there was a combination of things. I think Getafe do struggle away from home. They're having a good season, really good season, but most of their points are gained and in their own stadium. They'd struggle on their way on their travels. Their tactics from Bordalas were reckless and they didn't change. But it wasn't straightforward. I mean, it was only 1-0 at half time. And at that stage, Getafe were not threatening to score on a regular occurrence during the game. The possibility was there for it still to be a uncomfortable afternoon for Barcelona. But they ran away with it in the second half. And I was surprised that Getafe didn't change tactics. They defended high up the pitch, almost on the halfway line. They had allowed the balls in behind. And I was pleasant surprise, to be honest, that Barcelona played the way they did in terms of recognising that, and Rafinha in particular making runs in behind. Christensen did it as well for the goal. He's improving on a weekly basis. So I think there are elements of Barcelona. I look at that. It was a good result. It's the type of result you'd expect, type of performance you expect. Players are coming back from injury now. Xavi's making, you know, some interesting team selections. And for a spell over the weekend, you're thinking, are they back in the title race? If Real Madrid slip up against Sevilla for a period in that game, that might be the case. So Barcelona, I think, when I look at Barcelona now, and I know we've been talking about Lamine Yamal on a regular basis, what he's achieving is astonishing. I do actually feel there's an 11 there at the moment, with Balde being injured and Gavi being injured. I still think there's an 11 there that can, on their day, challenge anybody in the Champions League. And unfortunately for Lamine Yamal's fans, I don't think he's in that. I don't think Kubasi is in that. But then if you're looking at names and reputation and experience and quality, if Barcelona were to put out a team at the moment, with who's available, Ter Stegen in goal, Koundé right back, Cancelo left back, Araujo, and Iniesta Martinez, I mean, he's got injury issues, he's in and out, then I still would prefer to play Frankie de Jong as a holding midfield player and ask him to do that role. I mean, he played well in this game, his runs going forwards were good. And I'd play Frankie de Jong with Pedri and Gundogan. And up front, I would start the three that started at the weekend, Rafinha on the right, Felix on the left, Lewandowski up front. That's 11 top-class players that could compete and should be able to compete with one or two minor the alterations needed from Frankie de Jong. He would have to play the Sergio Busquets holding midfield role. And he can do that. I don't think he'll ever be as good defensively as Busquets, but I think he's intelligent enough and he's technical enough to receive the ball off the two centre-backs with the full-backs pushing high, dropping in between the two centre-backs. We've seen him play centre-back on a number of occasions, so he can play in there when it's needed. so he can make the three at the back when the fullbacks push on. I think that that would be the Barcelona's best 11. Christensen's getting better week by week. I mean, he's not only just defending now, he's breaking forward. He's recognising he's a smart player, intelligent player, technically good player. But I think that 11, if you've got that 11 out for Barcelona on a regular basis now, so that they do develop an understanding. If you're playing Barcelona and you're looking at that team, it's you know, it may not be Messi, Neymar and Suarez up front, but you got Rafinha, João Félix, Lewandowski or Lamine Yamal if you want to play Lamine Yamal. That's quite a daunting prospect for anybody to face in the Champions League. So it's going to be tough for them to close the gap on Real Madrid. I mean, they're going to look at it and they're going to think, well, we're 8 points behind. We've got a Clásico to play. It's away from home. The one or two difficult games for Real Madrid coming up. They'll be hoping to get closer. And if you get closer, then the pressure's on. Then it can change. But at the moment, I think they're a considerable distance away from doing that. But the signs are better, and they were better in this game.
Right. There we are. Barcelona report.
Do you agree with that? Do you think that 11, I'm not pinning that 11 down, but if you were playing against Barcelona with those 11 players, forget the season, how the season's going, forget the goals they're letting in terms of what they could possibly do. That 11 is up there with the last eight in the Champions League. And once you get the last eight in the Champions League, we do know there will be teams that will be favoured. But in, you know, in knockout football, I don't see that as an impossibility that 11 players couldn't challenge seriously for the Champions League. They need to find confidence. They need to find form. They need to find momentum. But that's a decent 11 at the moment that Barcelona can put out.
Do they have a chance of winning the Champions League? Yes. Do I have faith in their consistency? No.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So that's. I'm not putting any money on it. But if anyone else were to, I would say, by all means, if you get a good price, because you're right, on their day playing like that, but their day has not come around nearly often enough this season, and I'm not sure that Xavi will always put out. I think his decision making is a bit erratic this season. Yeah. So yes, on their day, could they be? Yeah, literally, they could beat anybody. So theoretically, yes, they are a contender for the Champions League. But I would say, yeah, I don't know how to obviously make it better. That's my problem with Barcelona because of the challenges coming down the line financially. So whoever replaces Xavi, and you look at that, you're not certain. Normally coming into a job, you'd say, right, I'll improve this, this and this, and then we'll be brilliant. You're not sure that they're not going to get worse because of the financial situation. So that's...
I'm fairly confident that might be the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be honest.
Mm. And so that's why having to use, like, it's disrespectful to Lamine Yamal, but in a way you should see the kids as something of a squad filler because he needs that playing time. I agree with you. If it was Champions League final tomorrow, I'd play Rafinha. But it's got an important role to play, as has Kubasi, and the other ones, Guiu, etc. But they're not equipped to win everything, are they? To go through, play 55, 60 games a season consistently. They're a way off that. That's
exactly. And I think with the young ones as well, they are so young. I mean, Lamine Yamal is 16. Mm. He's not going to know the game as well as Rafinha, so he's not going to make those runs that maybe the Rafinha recognised and was told to do at the weekend as handling the big game semi-final in the Champions League and stuff like that. You will make as many good decisions as bad decisions when you're 16 years of age, and that's natural. When you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you're still learning. So yeah. At 16, it's so much to ask. It's brilliant to have him involved at Barcelona. But I think, as you said as well, I think if you're picking a Champions League final team at the moment, he would be ideal to come off the bench for something, you know, depending on how the game's going, for something a little bit different, you know. And you know, he's a super talented player, but I just think when you're playing against someone and you look at their lineup and you're standing in the tunnel I'm not saying Rafinha is Neymar, far from it. But it, you would recognise, rather than when you're playing against a 16-year-old as an opponent, you'll be thinking, if you're Cole Walker or something, or someone like at that standard, you're thinking, yeah, as a kid, I'm gonna do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to get tied to him, let's see how he handles it, stuff like that. So it's great for Barcelona to have these young players. But that 11, in my opinion, at the moment, could challenge for, you know, in any game of football.
Yeah. Real Madrid, obviously, are top of the league. They were worked hard by Sevilla, and then someone who's very much at the other end of his career, Luka Modric, with a lovely goal, beautifully taken. Not just the finish itself, the little use of his body to make himself the space, which we've seen. How many times have we seen?
The use of his little body, or little use of his body.
Yes. It's a win, isn't it? Without Bellingham, they lack a little bit. It wasn't perfect by Real Madrid, but then Sevilla recently have turned themselves into a much more difficult prospect to beat. And coming away with the points is a job done.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't see it coming, I have to be honest, despite the way the game was being played, because Real Madrid clearly were on top. Neyland was having a fantastic game in goal for Sevilla. Bade and Ramos in particular were making blocks and throwing themselves in the way of shots and stuff like that, and tracking runs. Real Madrid had all the pressure. So if anyone was going to score, it's going to be Real Madrid. But I did feel at that stage, I mean, Modric, 81 minutes, he hadn't been on the pitch long, come on 6 minutes before, 75. It was a frustrating night for Real Madrid. I couldn't see who was going to make the breakthrough, despite them having all the play. I just thought it was one of those nights where they were just going to struggle to get the goal, and Sevilla were going to defend right to the very end. And Sevilla have proved recently they are harder to beat now. Mm. So it was a lovely story, to be honest. And Modric doesn't get much playing time, and then he comes on and just gives you a little reminder of the quality that we've been able to witness firsthand in the last over a decade now at Real Madrid. I witnessed the Spurs. And just goes to remind you of what a fantastic footballer he is. Not was, he still is.
Yeah.
But it's tougher for him to get regular playing time. But I agree with you, it was a fantastic finish. Should it have been disallowed? That was my immediate thought was no. And then on reflection, I do think it should have been.
Okay.
I think that the defensive line of Sevilla is interfered with by the fact there's a player offside. They hold the edge of the 18-yard box, which is their responsibility, and there's a split second of indecision, because if Rudiger's not there, Bade might drop in earlier to head the ball away better than what he did. But the fact he was holding the line because Rudiger was running offside, that's part of the defender's job in that position.
Mm.
To, you know, rather than run back in with Rudiger to get a bit header away and play at the risk of playing Rudiger onside, Bade, Ramos, they tried to hold the right across the edge of the penalty area. So they're holding that line, knowing if that player's there, he's offside, and then that player chooses not to take part in the game, then your position as a centre back is adjusted because of the interpretation of the law of the game. So it's a poor header from Bade, because if he'd have gone back in and played Rudiger onside, he would have been 2 yards behind and been able to head it away clearer. But the header he achieved in the end was one of, he wasn't in the right position because it was going over his head. He had to step back and could only get a weak-headed clearance. So I think and Lauren on La Liga TV, as a defender, as a forward, I would want that goal to be allowed. As a defender, and I then it was my thought process begin to change and think, I get what you're saying. You know, defenders and defences are coached to hold a line. And when you're talking about players being interfering with play, he's in the penalty box. He's close to the ball. So when the cross comes in, it's, although he doesn't make an effort to get on the end of it, it, because it's in the final third of the pitch, because it's in the penalty box, I think that interpretation is a difficult one to get a unanimous decision on, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I see your point. The other thing that we've got now is very much players are lining up offside deliberately, aren't they, at set pieces?
Yeah.
And then trying to get back onside again. I don't want to go through the whole Liverpool-Chelsea thing, but it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because if you are doing that deliberately, because then you are, but then you are using that.
You're trying to interfere.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a deliberate ploy. So if it's a deliberate ploy that involves being offside at some point, it's a fair point as to whether you sort of allow that. I don't know. I don't want to sort of legislate more, because I think the reason we're handball's a mess is because we've over-legislated it. We're trying to define exactly what this is, rather than just letting the guys in the black shirts decide on the pitch, which I think is better, isn't it? I think that's a better solution. Yeah, but I take your point. Can I ask you about Alphonso Davies? He's a spectacular player. Real Madrid, it's weird, isn't it? They've signed an agreement with him. When was the law changed that you go to the player first and do an agreement with him and his agent before you do a deal with Bayern Munich? I thought you were still supposed to go to a club that, if he plays for another team, that you're supposed to go to that team first, aren't you? But it's not seemed to how it not to how it works now with big clubs, is it?
No, I wasn't aware the rule changed. So I presume it hasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But I presume that is still.
But apparently they've signed an agreement, or they've made an agreement with Alphonso Davies, and the only thing missing is Bayern Munich. He plays for Bayern Munich.
Yeah. They literally do own him.
Yeah, yeah.
And unless you pay what they want, you can agree everything you want with a player.
I mean, I guess the thing, he's out of contract in 2025.
Yeah, it happened.
So, yeah, so basically now they've said, right, he's coming. So this is what they're doing. He's coming to us in 2025. Do you want to sell him this summer? Presumably at some kind of reduced, well, now you've got to negotiate a price. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because in terms of bodies, they're quite well stocked at left back. Real Madrid, with the possibility of Miguel Gutierrez, that they can pick up on like 8 million euros or something, pay more than that for Alphonso Davies, aren't they? But having said that, he's a spectacular player, isn't he? So Real Madrid, you want the best.
You want
an
upgrade.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is an upgrade on Frank Garcia and Fellow Monday.
Yeah.
So that's their responsibility, Real Madrid. Any big club, any good club, any well-run club should always be looking with the manager and asking, where can we get better? You can't just rest on what you've got. You have to always look to try and improve. And he would be an improvement. Yeah. And he would be a spectacular fullback. So that would be an improvement. I applaud any club that does that. If you're in a position of strength and you're doing well and you're winning trophies and stuff like that, and you're still looking, you still have to look to improve wherever you can. And if that means selling players to bring in that player that's better than the ones you've already got, Mondi and Frank Garcia are good. Camavinga's good when he plays there, but Alphonso Davies is Real Madrid quality. And I think it's a wise decision to be looking ahead. They're really planning well. I mean, I know Florentino Perez has got his critics mostly from other clubs, but the club is run spectacularly well compared to how it has been in the past. And I always made this comparison about managers. They might get the sack three or four times. Their fifth or sixth job, they might actually start to be a really, really good manager, because it takes you that process to go through and to manage different clubs, different levels, different players, different quality. And then suddenly everything falls into place and you become a professional manager. You've learned everything. And I kind of look at Real Madrid now, and you look back at the time that Florentino Perez, both spells, has been in charge. He must have learned all those lessons. And I think the partnership with him and Ancelotti is the best it could be for Real Madrid. We don't hear much from Florentino Perez now, apart from, you know, trying to start other leagues up and stuff like that. But there was a time in the past where managers were being sacked willy-nilly. There was a time in the past where he was in the media, referees, arguing with Barcelona, arguing with La Liga on a regular basis. We barely hear from him now, and the club is being run spectacularly well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still things I'm not in love with Real Madrid. I think they're at war with La Liga.
Yeah, that's
an issue. People know about this, the 19 clubs in La Liga that signed up for what I think is fantastic access to what we get to see on La Liga TV. And La Liga around the world, with the stuff in the changing rooms, the stuff in the tunnels, you remember when they ran the drinks breaks and the microphone was dropped down and we got some, you know, some conversation between the players and the coaches and stuff? And we get pitch sides with, you know, the reporters and the commentators. Real Madrid are the only ones that haven't signed up to it. And literally, you're, as a La Liga pitch side reporter, you're not allowed in the stadium until about 10 minutes before kickoff. So when you get to see our reporters, Manu and Carlos and people like that, you know, you see them in the, on the touchline. They're in the thick of the action at Real Madrid until 10 minutes before kickoff. The footage is coming from outside the Bernabeu. So it's all there, you know, is a war going on with La Liga and Real Madrid. They're one of the three clubs, I think, that haven't agreed to limit the price or cost of away tickets, because that's been, I think, 17 clubs in La Liga agreed to a, I think, sell at €35 a ticket. A certain amount of tickets per game for away supporters to come to the stadium. Real Madrid are one of those that haven't agreed to that. I know it's because they can charge what they like, but it's so there's issues with Real Madrid that still can be controversial, divisive. But as in terms of Florentino Perez running Real Madrid and running the recruitment, the spending, the stadium, keeping the manager, picking the managers, it's the last 10 years have been outstanding from Real Madrid.
Right. Right. Girona. They got there in the end. In the this was one of the two games absolutely flooded with people. So 3-0 against Rayo Vallecano, but a gloss by a couple of late goals by Savio.
Yeah, it was the first half they were poor. It did look like the team that had lost two games on the trot and didn't look like they were going to win again for another few weeks. They were slower than usual. This is, you know, the confidence has taken a dent in the last couple of games. A reality check, maybe. Athletic Club away from home is a tough game. Real Madrid away from home is a tough game. So the reality check was there, and it did take them a while to get going. I thought they were poor in the first half, but second half they were much better, much brighter, much quicker, sharper, and looked more like the Girona we've become accustomed to seeing this season. But as you say, it was glossed over by Savio's two goals in the last few minutes of the game. Pep Chavarria got sent off when it was 1-0. And after that, he got sent off in the 76th minute. And then after that, there was a 10-minute spell where Girona with 11 men and in one man advantage. They were threatened by Rayo. They had nothing to lose at that stage. Then Savio got one goal, game was done, and then he finished it off with two fantastic goals from him. Good goal from Sienkov as well. So it all turned out really well for Girona. And you made the point about the rain. It's a 9 o'clock kickoff on a Monday night. It's not the most glamorous of games against Rayo Vallecano. Those supporters that persevered, sitting there till gone 11 o'clock at night, probably about 11:15 at night, soaked, literally soaked right through. And it does make you look and you think, why? It's a basic requirement to give a little bit of comfort to someone who's paying that amount of money for a ticket. And people want to go and watch the Girona fans, want to go and be part of what's happening to that club this year. So I almost feel that, like it should be mandatory that customer care in La Liga has to be better. And it happens in the sun as well. As I said earlier, you're sitting in the sun in Sevilla with no shelter. It is murder. So the infrastructure is getting better. The money is there. And certainly, you know, my credit goes to those supporters last night. They're enjoying the season. They want to be part of it. But to sit there on a Monday night, 9 o'clock kickoff, pouring down with rain, literally no shelter whatsoever. We saw people at half-time. They were drenched.
Yes.
Still had another hour to go sitting in it. And as you said, Nico Perez with the jumper on, soaked like, right through.
Oh, it looked like something had gone horribly wrong in his life. Mate, what have you come to that you're standing there? It's some scruffy-looking jumper by the end of it. Just like ruined. Yeah, anyway. Right, Almeria 2, Atletico Madrid 2. So Luca Romero is a funny old player, isn't he?
Old.
Yeah, well, for a young lad, He's been his career's had ups and downs. He scores a couple of goals in this game. Almeria, as we've said a number of times, played all right again. Somehow managed never to win a game. But 2-2 against Atletico. Obviously, that's not a bad result, is it? It just goes with all the other games that they never ever win. Atleti, obviously, they've got the Copa del Rey game coming up, haven't they? So, is that an are we giving them an excuse for that?
I don't think we can. I think Atleti's squad is still strong enough to make the changes that they made and still be better. They should be beating Almeria away, but it is a pattern that we've seen this season where they struggle away from home. Simeone said he takes full responsibility that he should prepare his teams better for away matches. He's not, but I wished he would be more specific in what the differences are between preparing for a match away from home and at home. I think there's an element of him taking the responsibility away from the players as well. So he's big enough, strong enough, powerful enough to take that blame rather than place it on the players. But Almeria were good. They have been for some while. I mean, Luca Romero is a really interesting, someone I completely forgot about. When he first came back, I was like, is that the one that used to, the young boy, the 15-year-old at Mallorca? Where's he been? And it's quite bizarre what's happened to him, to be honest, really. He's 19 now, 15 when he first played for Mallorca. I know he left Mallorca and he went to Lazio. I didn't realise, I've been looking into it. He went on a free transfer. Don't know how that happened. And then Lazio allowed him to leave on a free transfer to Milan in the summer. And now he's come on loan to Almeria. And the quality that those two we saw from those two goals were absolutely astonishing.
Yeah,
I mean, the top draw against Atletico Madrid. I mean, Atletico Madrid, we can talk about the goals. They concede more than one goal a game now. They concede a load of goals away from home. They've been away from home. It's 15 points away, 37 at home. 37 is the best in La Liga. And then, you know, 15 points, they've lost six, drawn four. Four wins, three draws, six defeats. It's such a contrast. But in this game, Almeria were good. I think Atleti probably deserve to win, but it's a failing that they keep conceding goals. And in this game, they were undone by two fantastic bits of skill from Luca Romero. So I'm fascinated to see how he does now, because the quality he showed with both of those goals was top draw.
Yeah.
I'm nearly world class, and I'll be one like those Premier League reporters and fans that as soon as we see someone play well, it's world class. But the two goals were genuine top out the top draw. So yeah. I want to see more of him now. And he might be the answer to Almeria, you know, picking up a win.
I have a clear distinction, definition in my mind of what world class is, by the way, which is if you were playing against another planet and you have to pick a squad. If I name a player and you think, okay, that's a sensible shout, then he is world class. If I were to say to you, Willy Swedberg, you'd say, no, be ridiculous. If I say to you Jude Bellingham, you say, yeah. So therefore, he's world class. So if he's a genuine, sensible suggestion to be in this squad to play for the world, then he's world class. I think that's.
And it's difficult for us to know the world of football as well. It's, you know, people may say they know.
It's smaller now, though, isn't it?
It's because smaller, but if you're focusing and watching enough of one league like we do.
Yeah,
I haven't had time to watch Serie A this week. So on a regular basis, that's the occurrence. The Bundesliga are flicking in and out of the Premier League. So
but you're essentially your
world class. You need to see them on a regular basis rather than a World Cup or a European Championships.
Yeah, but if you watch the Champions League, you're getting the world class players. Yeah. Realistically, people still make this distinction. He's one of the best in Europe, as opposed to the best in the world. The reality is the best players play in Europe because there is this very efficient, money driven system that drags them all to Europe because there's more money. And I'm not including Saudi Arabia yet. If they were signing 25-year-olds, the best 25-year-olds, it would be a different matter. But the best players all play in the Champions League, essentially. Yeah. So really, if you watch the Champions, that's where you're picking your world team from. So if you're not, you know, the odd year, you can be outside of the Champions League as an accident. That's fine. Doesn't mean you're not world-class. But generally, we do know who the best teams are.
And also, I think people don't disagree. No matter which team you support, there are obvious players now in the past that everybody, even if you hate that particular team, they're that good and they stand out that much and they've achieved it for so long.
Yeah.
That if you're a Barcelona fan, you can't say Toni Kroos. No, he was never world class. Yeah. Of course he was. Yeah. Modric.
No.
And if you're a Real Madrid fan, you can't say Xavi Iniesta. No, they weren't Busquets. They weren't. Of course they weren't.
Kroos is a good example because I'm not sure if I sat down and really thought about it whether he'd make the team of a world team or not. But he's a candidate, isn't he? It's not ridiculous to suggest it. And so you
and
respect him enough.
The body of work
as
well.
Yeah. But again, it doesn't. You don't have to be. Otherwise, because you're not just accumulating, you're not just giving it to old players. You can be world class at 20.
Yeah.
I don't know how old Haaland is. He's obviously world class and he's still very young, isn't he? That's my definition. Basically, are you good enough to be a serious contender to be in the world team? And if you're not, then you're not world class. Obviously, banging in a couple of great goals. Luca Romero.
He's world class.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there is such a thing as a world class goal because basically, a fullback at a fourth division team can rocket one in from 30 yards into the top corner. And fair enough, everyone can hit a ball, you know, reasonably well at times, can't they? So, yeah, there's no such thing as a world-class goal, I don't think. Anyway, we've got other games to do. We need the world-class Johnny Cardoso for Betis.
£6 million.
Sorry?
£6 million they've paid.
Yes, yes. He started brilliantly, hasn't he? So, US, sort of American-Brazilian guy who's played for Betis, got an absolute cracking goal. In a win over Athletic, there's plenty to discuss in this, isn't it? Can we do the red card first for Nico Williams? Now, you said to me beforehand that you were glad that he got sent off because at least it's consistency. I think it's consistently mad to be sending players off.
Maybe,
I don't care about consistency if it's
possibly
wrong.
The point I was making is that Rayo gets sent off the week before for, I don't think, as bad, as obvious, as confrontational as Nico Williams. So I would have hated this week to have seen Nico Williams behave like he did and get away with it, because then I'd have been, if I was a Mallorca fan, or, you know, I would look at it and go, hang on, that's literally not fair.
Yeah.
But that's the reason I was glad. And I couldn't believe he did it. First of all, it's not, I'm not even sure it's a foul.
Precisely.
It's not a yellow card.
Yeah.
So it's one of those again. And then, you, in that frustration, you have to hold back.
Yeah.
So Nico Williams has to go, really? And just leave it.
Yeah.
Take the yellow card, take the free kick. The fact he then had a little argument.
What does he do? He claps his hands.
Yeah, but it was.
And pulls a face.
Ryo's was kind of as the referee was walking away. And it was
but Nico Williams,
three or four claps.
He doesn't go up and do it in his face.
Nico was giving him a standard ovation, John, right in front of his face, and then gave him the.
But it wasn't in his face. That's the crucial thing, is it? He's a distance away. He's not physically threatening the referee. I'm never an advocate for like abusing, surrounding referees, screaming at them, denouncing them on social media, all of this. That's all wrong. But you've got to, as a match official, accept that there is an emotional reaction from a player. And if the emotional reaction an instinctive emotional reaction is to go, oh, well played, ref, clap your hands. Yeah. That's not another yellow card. You've got to allow that.
That's a different
you've got
debate.
To allow some people some emotional reaction, which is not screaming in their face, which is not Jurgen Klopp sort of towering over them, looking like he's about to kill them. It's just he's not in his face. He's a few steps away and he claps his hands. He can't send him off.
I appreciate what you're saying, but my theory was just based on the week before that you can't have one law for Mallorca players and one law for Athletic Club players. So I agree with you on both cases. The referee could have handled that so different. But there was an element I'm looking at and thinking, don't do that. You know what's happened. He must have seen.
Yeah. If I was his manager,
now you give him the thumbs up.
Yeah.
And he pointed as if to say, "Go on, send me off." And the referee applied. He kind of put the referee in a position where he had no other choice because of what happened.
Well, that's the problem with authority. When you exercise authority too harshly, where are you going with it? Because, you know, that's the problem, isn't it? You're going to start sending people. What if they all start clapping? You're going to send everybody off.
Well, that's when the law has to be changed in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, but then if you specifically say you are allowed to clap sarcastically in the referee's face for 20 seconds. Where do you draw the line? So I just think the players got to be wiser than that. You've seen it can happen. We're now getting instances. People have shown examples of other players doing it. Vinicius is the main one. He's done it on a number of occasions and hasn't been sent off.
But it's difficult, isn't it? Because if now we're looking for consistency on this, what, we're going to VAR people now? Are we going to, oh, hang on, there was the left back. Well, you missed him. The left back was clapping you sarcastically. Go and send him off. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's not. You've got to have a. It's not the level to be sending players off the pitch. It's not violent. It's not threatening. It's if you say, we often say, oh, well, if you abuse referee, where does it leave the guy on a Sunday morning? If I was refereeing a game on a Sunday morning and all I ever got was a sarcastic round of applause, I'd be fine, absolutely fine, I'll take that. My ego is not so fragile that you can't clap me sarcastically. Anyway, the rest of
it. It changed, and an impact in this game as well. Yeah, it's a massively. Tough game for Athletic Club. Betis can be good at home. The scoreline at the time was 2-0. That kind of, when it happened, you thought there was no way back. Underestimate, mate. Athletic Club are your peril. They did make a little bit of a fight to get back into the game. But they would have been better served with Nico Williams on the pitch. Betis had to take Jimmy Avila off because of ridiculous circumstances. He is what he is. I mean, he gets a kick from a challenge where he has a shot. A player, I think it's Danny Vivian, flicks his foot up. Does catch him somewhere, but not in the face. Jimmy Avila rolls around, found his way into the penalty box. I don't know why he thought the foul was clearly outside. If there was a foul, the foul was clearly outside the box. But if I roll 10 yards, it might get a penalty. Well, no, VAR's there. You're not going to get that.
He did a lot of rolling, didn't he? He covered quite a distance.
And when you saw the blow, there was a slight contact with the neck, a flick of the wrist caught him in the neck, but it wasn't enough to pole-ex him. And then minutes later, there was another challenge which he over-exaggerated the contacts and started rolling around, holding his head, trying to get the player in trouble. The referee pulled him up about it. It was kind of a weird one. What can the referee do there? That you know, exaggerating injury on two occasions. Pellegrini recognised it and knew there was a possible threat of Betis going down to 10 men. So took him off straight away.
Can I ask you about, because you mentioned the access that clubs give to La Liga and the cameras and all of that. And this was an interesting case, wasn't it? Because the cameras picked up a conversation in the tunnel with Jim Cavalier's teammates. Was it Pablo Fornals who says...
Pablo Fornals,
yeah, he says, we've basically we've got to calm him down. We can't let him go into a war, which is an interesting...
Start of war.
Yeah.
Was this pre-match or half-time?
Look, I thought beforehand, actually.
I thought beforehand, but why would they know that before? Maybe it was a reaction to...
Yeah.
Going down to 10 men, Jimmy getting irritated.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know if anyone knows better. Yeah, it's a fair point. But it did... I was thinking, I'm not sure that's fair to broadcast that, if I'm honest, because you are sort of eavesdropping. And then broadcasting it.
We caught Benzema, didn't we, once when he said about don't pass to Vinicius. He's playing for the other team.
Now,
those sort of things can be said in jest.
But he wasn't in jest then, was he? He was because Fornals is actually showing some care for his teammates.
Oh, Fornals wasn't in jest. This was a genuine.
Yeah, but he wasn't being hostile. He was looking after Jimmy Avila. He was basically saying, come on, lads, we need to calm him down a bit. I'm not sure that, I don't know, I can see if you're the club, if you're Real Madrid, you'd be thinking, I'm glad we don't share. I mean, it's obviously over money for Real Madrid, but I can, as a player, would you be a bit offended if you'd been picked up, if you've signed this agreement for pictures to be there, but they're picking up what you're saying about your teammates and broadcasting it? It's a bit out of order, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a line that has to be careful that is not crossed.
Yeah.
Privacy and stuff like that. And again, players like Nico Williams had to be smarter. Players will have to be smarter and remember that.
Yeah, but the whole putting your hand over your face and talking to each other business. What if he was walking out and they were talking about who someone had slept with?
Yeah.
Well, are we going to broadcast that? You know, it's perfectly possible, isn't it? You think it's you think you're having a private conversation, but you're being recorded. And I just think, honestly, I think it's a bit. I think that's a bit out of order to broadcast that. Anyway, good result.
Yeah, and translation as well, wasn't it? The text was up. It was telling us exactly what was being said. Yeah, that was that. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Something we don't get to see, but I understand totally what you're saying. Should we get to hear that sort of thing? It's put Full Nails in an awkward position. I haven't seen too much more about it in the media, but I imagine that would have been a massive story in the Premier League.
He will have to go to Jimmy Avila and talk to him once.
Explain.
And say, listen, yeah. I'm sorry, but... And if he's honest, he'd say, listen, mate, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was picked up saying it, but I actually do believe it. Yeah. That's where you've got to front up now, haven't you?
And I was proved right.
Yeah, yes.
In the fact that you got yourself substituted
by
Pellegrini to save us going down to the 10 men.
Yeah.
And ultimately, he'd scored a goal. He was playing well. Betis were playing well. They were playing against 10 men.
Mm.
So you wouldn't want to get brought off. So why act ridiculously to make then the manager think, I can't keep him on. Otherwise, we're going to be 10 against 10. It's now 2-1. I don't want to risk that. We've got an advantage. Take him off and change, make that change. So it cost him.
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about William Jose getting credited with the second goal and what a good run of form he's in. That's not his goal. He misses a chance. He misses he misses a sitter. It's a great cross. Betis tactic, crossing the ball in behind the Athletic Club defenders, worked on the first goal, worked on the second goal. But William Jose gets a touch on the end of it. Simon makes the save. It's coming back out. It's a good save. It's coming back out towards the edge of the penalty box. It's Yuri Bacici and goes in. And I'm hearing people say, oh, William Jose scored another goal. No, he didn't. He missed the sitter and he got lucky, and Betis got lucky that he hit Bacici from close range and ricocheted in. But Johnny Cardoso, 6 million. And do you know what? He's got the lot. Literally everything. When he scored a couple of goals, now it's a super goal in this game. He works as hard as anyone does in central midfield in La Liga. And on top of that, he can pass the ball, he can run with the ball, he's a fabulous player. I'd be amazed if he's not gone in the summer.
Yeah, for a lot more than 6 million euros.
Yeah. Yes. And I'd say that with respect to Betis, that the money will come in handy when they sell him for 30 million and have him for a short period of time and make a fortune on him.
Yeah.
So why, you know, Betis recruitment here? Absolutely, he's a fabulous player.
Yeah. Right, Cadiz 2, Celta Vigo 2, which actually sort of keeps the... If Celta Vigo had held out in that game, we'd be looking at a big old gap of points there, wouldn't we? So really, really important that Cadiz came back. They hadn't given the impression they were going to score a goal since we can remember. And then, so they got it back to 2-1, and then in the 100th minute, was it Darwin Maggi's absolute rasper to level it up?
Shoot him from there. That's the surprising element. That's what surprises everyone involved in the equator in goal for Celta. That was the surprising element, that it's not a shooting position. Takes a corner, it's cleared, he follows the play in, the ball rebounds to him, I think, and then where he should be crossing it towards the far post and maybe whipping it with a bit of pace that he might go in at the far post, he wraps his foot around it, whips it into the near post, top corner. Mm. A ridiculous goal. A brilliant goal. And meant as well, this wasn't a cross that...
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It was an out and out. He hit that with anger.
A little rush of blood, almost, wasn't it? He was thinking, it rolled nicely to him, and he was almost thinking, you know what? I can absolutely leather this here.
And it was anger. He hit it with anger because he'd been sitting on the bench for the last few weeks. He's been watching the dross that's been playing up front, and no one's scoring a goal. And he got put on as a sub in this game, and he comes on, and he's probably full of anger, probably even infuriated by the fact that he's the corner in the last minute of the game, the 100th minute, is cleared. No one's on the end of it. And when it comes back to him, he just smacks it with so much anger and temper. And it whipped into the top corner. It was, I mean, Luca Romero's goals were good. Modric's goal was good. Darwin Machis, this guy, he had no right to score from there. And Celta are guilty again. They keep throwing away leads. They keep throwing away points at the end of the match. They're 3 points above Cadiz. This might just be the catalyst with Cadiz. It's no surprise Wanmi scores. He hasn't been playing much for Cadiz. Newly signed. He gets a goal. Darwin Machis has been on the bench, desperate to get on. He comes on. He scores. So the first goal was under Pellegrino. They were much needed. They were 2-0 down. They were dead and buried. So the fact they've come back, fantastic atmosphere in that stadium. It took some getting used to seeing players in different kit, the home kit. I looked into it. It's a tribute to the Spanish Navy.
Right, okay. So
the kit was two colours. It was meant to look like the sea.
Two shades of
white. So it was a one-off tribute to the Spanish Navy, which have close ties to Cadiz and the port and historic ships that have sailed and from the port in Cadiz.
Okay, well, that's nice. But I missed the start of the game. I had no idea. Look like the Navy then, did it?
West did either, because it wasn't mentioned. So I had to go looking for the reason why Cadiz weren't... Well, they actually, Cadiz were the only people in the stadium that weren't wearing yellow.
Right, yeah, yes.
Every supporter in that stadium wears yellow. It's there, but
Celta Vigo wear blue, which is quite a sort of navy-like colour anyway, so that's they could have just worn their ordinary colours.
I'm sure people that haven't watched much Spanish football might have tuned into that game and thought, well, who's who?
Yeah.
Which team's which? It needed explaining. It was quite confusing. And the players look different than Cadiz. You go, oh, who's that? Who's that? Just because they were in a different kit. Weird how that happens.
We are easily confused. Right. So Real Sociedad 1, Villarreal 3. Bit of smash and grab, but it is 1-7 for Real. Yeah. So their form is really bad, isn't it?
It is. And this was a total smash and grab. I mean, I'll read you some of the stats just to explain that 71% possession for La Real, 29 for Villarreal. And Real Sociedad, they had 21 shots, 8 on target. Villarreal, 6 shots, 4 on target, 3 goals. But that's sometimes how you play away from home. Maybe you wouldn't want to concede that many attempts on goal. Maybe you are comfortable with not having possession. And maybe you're very comfortable playing on the counter-attack. But then if you've got all those things, then you need a midfielder to break forward and Santi Camisano did that, and particularly for the second goal. His first goal was a staying up in the box, set piece and whatever, but the second goal, he breaks forward from midfield once they do play on the counter-attack. They did that part of the game really well, Vieira. Real Sociedad are just suffering. I mean, Mikel Merino scores in the 86th minute to make it 2-1. He had come on as a sub. This week, Andre Silva started up front. Umar Sadiq came on for him just over the hour mark. Not much impact. It's a particularly, I was going to say frustrating, it's a disastrous time for Real Sociedad in terms of their campaign to try and play European football again next season. Cup match coming up midweek against Mallorca, 0-0. They're at home.
Tonight, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, yes, Thursday night is the other game. So that's a big game for them. Big game coming up against PSG in the Champions League. Still a lot to play for. I don't want to write their season off. If they get to a cup final, they've already got to a good stage, having won the group in the Champions League. They've got a fighting chance at home against PSG. It's going to be tough, 2-0 deficit, of course, but this was a really tough evening for them. It had the look of a team and a manager who were thinking, what next? We're trying everything. And, you then start to feel the unluckiest team in the world. You know, we're not going to score, we're not going to win games, and confidence is in a very low position for Real Sociedad now. For Villarreal, 13th, 29 points. They've, really pushed their way up the table recently, as we thought they would and should. And it was quite ironic that the 95th minute goal from sub Sorloff, who wasn't playing for either team, should be playing for both of them. Wasn't getting a game for Villarreal. He was on the bench again. Real Sociedad haven't been the same since they let him go. And he comes on and scores with a nice amount of celebration. It was respectful. So, you know, we judge the celebration. You think, oh, that's not bad. You know, he's celebrated with his teammates, but he hasn't gone berserk. He's not rubbing salt into the wounds. It was the right amount of respect shown. So, it, fantastic win for Vieira.
Las Palmas won, Osasuna won a game of... It was a good competitive game, wasn't it? And then a couple of wonderful volleys to get the goals.
Una Garcia, what? I'm looking at that one. Marco van Basten. It was like Hugo Sanchez, and he's a really decent, solid, pretty normal centre back, and pulled a spectacular technique out with a volley to give Osasuna the one goal lead. Kieran Rodriguez. Fantastic season. That's his sixth goal of the season. That was a decent volley as well. Not as good as Unai Garcia's, but it was still a good goal. Las Palmas dominated. Osasuna happy with a draw. Both teams looked, both managers. It was interesting watching the interview after the game when they're both talking at the same time, both sharing an interview, which I like. It's awkward. You know, it's Pimienta saying we dominated, we had this, we had that, and then he's trying to show respect to Arrasate and Osasuna. And why he's saying we dominated, we had this, we had that, you can see little frowns and facial reactions from Arrasate as if saying, no, I don't agree with that. And then he tries to be polite as well and say, well, we didn't care that they dominated. But it's quite an interesting aspect, having both managers being interviewed at the same time alongside each other. They were polite, they were respectful. I'd like to see when both of them are at it and they've both got something to be annoyed at, that you interview both managers at the same time. So I think both teams are happy with a point in this game, mid-table. Las Palmas been fantastic this season, also soon getting their act together now. Know that Las Palmas is a difficult place to get a result. So,
and yeah, they're just... both
okay.
So just below mid-table, Alaves 1, Mallorca 1. Another six-pointer that ends up as a two-pointer. So we've had plenty of those this season. Are these two, given that the bottom three are in danger of being cut adrift a little bit, is this okay for these two, Alaves and Mallorca?
It is for Alaves, not for Mallorca.
Right.
Alaves, 29 points.
Yeah.
They're well clear. They've been fabulous this season. I mean, they're not breathtaking, they're not world-class by any means, but a team that have struggled in recent years in terms of going up and down the divisions, haven't been inspiring to watch. They've been good this season, I think. So I think that is a 12th position, 29 points. I think that's, they're 11 points clear relegation. Mm. I mean, another 10 points, 12 points, they'll be safe. And that's mission accomplished for Mallorca, 24 points. That's their 12th draw. They snatched the draw in this game. It's they maybe were the better team slightly because they, I think Alaves now are being cautious. So Alaves and Luis Garcia Plaza are happy with eking out a point here and a point there and keeping teams below them where they were in Mallorca's case. So I think Mallorca, they've got the cup semi-final this week. I think they'll be relieved. Aguirre will be relieved when it's done and dusted this week, the cup and the finals towards the end of the season. Then his team can focus. They played well in this game, actually. I think if any team was going to win it would have been Mallorca. But another draw for them. There's 12 this season, along with a couple of other teams that are drawing too many games. But no, Mallorca, they're not in desperate trouble. I expect them to be safe, but they're too close for comfort at the moment still.
Yes. Yes. Right, if you want to be a patron, it's patreon.com/LTEL. And it would be nice to have you along with us. And everybody else, thank you for listening. And we'll see you for another podcast next week. So we'll see you then. Bye-bye.